Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Headlines are being written right now. An arrest has been made here in St. Louis in connection with the recent threats against Jewish community centers across the country. Our Rachel Lipman is on the story and joins me in studio. Rachel, it's a busy morning for you.
Always is.
Well, we know the name Juan Thompson is the name that we'll be talking about. What else do we know about him and what he's been doing?
So this is in connection to 8 threats against 7 different Jewish locations or agencies across the country. There's been a wave of about 90 of them since January. He's only been charged in threats against the Anti-Defamation League headquarters in New York, JCC's in Dallas, San Diego, Manhattan, the Jewish History Museum in New York City, and Jewish Day Schools in Manhattan and Michigan.
Not here.
No, he has not been charged specifically with the threat called into the St. Louis Jewish Community Center. And it's also important to note that all of these calls have so far been shown to be hoaxes. There has not been a bomb found at any of these locations, but it's still incredibly terrifying to have to evacuate the facility. And a lot of these JCCs have daycares or preschools in them, so you're evacuating children. But anyways, Juan Thompson, as you mentioned, is the individual who was picked up in St. Louis this morning. He's being charged in New York because it appears from reading the complaint out of the Southern District of New York, which is basically Manhattan and New York City, that it originated out of a cyberstalking investigation of his ex-girlfriend who lives in New York. She is a white woman. She's not named in the complaint, but
he is black.
He is black, yes. She is not named in the complaint, but her name has been out on his Twitter account and elsewhere. And from it, what I understand, looking through this complaint that was unsealed upon his arrest this morning, is in the course of investigating this cyberstalking against his ex-girlfriend, which is why he is charged with cyberstalking, that he had made some of the threats in her name or in his name in an attempt to bring her in and make her look like the one who is doing these threats.
We really don't know a lot of detail about that. We'd have to be speculating on exactly what the motives were and what have you.
Right. They as they put it in the complaint, that he circulated false and threatening information to, about, and in the name of a woman, victim one, that's his ex-girlfriend, over the internet, which caused this person substantial emotional distress.
It's going to be interesting to find out how the dots are connected. It's a very tangled web at the moment.
Absolutely. It's a lot of technical, looking through emails, IP addresses. There's a very cyber component to it. And the complaint, they even say, doesn't include all of the information they know about this case.
Has he been formally charged?
I don't know, because I'm never remembering whether a complaint is a formal charge. I know he has a first appearance this morning, and that may be the more formal charge setting, but he is at least accused of committing these 8 threats.
And he is still in St. Louis.
He was arrested in St. Louis, and I believe the initial appearance will be in St. Louis.
Is he a St. Louis resident?
He is a St. Louis native. If the name sounds a little bit familiar, he was involved, I believe, sometime in the middle of last year. He was a writer for The Intercept, and after investigation into some of his stories, it became evident that he had fabricated, or at least some aspects of some stories he'd written about racial issues after Ferguson, with municipal courts, policing, etc., could not be independently verified. He said he had spoken to, for example, a professor who was a professor of criminal justice, but she wasn't actually a professor of criminal justice, so he was fired from The Intercept for this.
So there is such a thing as fake news out there, after all, if you look at someone like this guy.
There is, unfortunately, things such as fake news, but this was truly – parts of it were truly fake. They were fabricated, and parts they couldn't fact check because they were stories about his life that he had told.
Intercept, we should point out, is an online publication.
It's an online publication. I think Glenn Greenwald was involved in it. It was sort of originated out of the whole Edward Snowden leaks, kind of investigating government surveillance, and has since broadened its focus.
We have to be careful because there's so much that we don't know, but he sounds like a very troubled individual.
From reading a little bit of what is in the complaint, it sounds like that there may be some kind of underlying issues here. There's a part of the complaint where the FBI agent who was doing some of the investigation talks about texts that the ex-girlfriend received from people purporting to be this individual, Mr. Thompson's friends, and in which they claimed that he had been the victim of a robbery and a shooting, had had gunshot wounds, had gone into arrest, that cardiac arrest. He was dying and could be taken off of life support. And as the FBI agent put it, based on my review of law enforcement records, it appears that this individual, Juan Thompson, had not, in fact, been the victim of a shooting. In the whole investigation into his work around The Intercept, claims came out that he had had testicular cancer. He did not verify to a Riverfront Times reporter, Doyle Murphy, who wrote an article on this, provided no verifying information here. So again, there isn't much. We don't know everything around this, but from what is in the complaint, it does sound like there's some kind of trouble, some kind of aspect that drove him to do this.
It's all over the place. I mean, it's just the story is just all every conceivable angle. Another part of the story against concerning the threats against the JCCAs is the vandalism at cemeteries across the country, and particularly here in St. Louis.
Yes.
Is there any kind of a connection that we know of possibly between him and these incidents?
That would be absolute gross speculation. The only thing that they can tie him to are these specific 8 threats made against these 7 separate Jewish organizations. You see nothing referenced anywhere about the cemetery vandalism.
Well, what happens now? There's a hearing this morning and another one this afternoon, I think I heard somewhere along.
Well, I think he'll make an initial appearance in court in St. Louis this afternoon. He's been arrested, and that this complaint that was originally sealed was unsealed, I believe, on his arrest. Again, this case was filed in the Southern District of New York because that's where the ex-girlfriend lives. So I don't know if there's – I'm assuming there's not extradition proceedings because it's the federal government and they're obviously nationwide, but my guess is that he'll do some kind of initial hearing and plea here, and they may work out transferring him to New York to face these charges.
Is there anything else about this story that that has caught your eye, as if there isn't enough
already? It's just some of the stuff that's in here that he's, you know, accused of doing. Again, goes back to this indication that, you know, he may be that there may be something kind of underlying all of this, everything from, you know, writing for The Intercept all the way up to now, that there's some kind of organic, for lack of a better way to put it, something driving some of this behavior.
Is he officially and formally considered a journalist? Is that his trade, his profession, or do we know?
I guess it depends on how you want to define journalist. I think he would claim himself as having been a journalist for The Intercept. What he claims that he is doing now, it's not listed in any kind of the formal court documents.
Well, there's an awful lot yet to unfold in this story. And I guess now it's up to the judicial system and the workings of justice, if you will, to determine how it's going to move forward.
It's going to be up to the courts to see what happens. And again, there's still 80 or so other threats out there that he has not been specifically tied to. We don't know if they are looking at him for other one of those threats that's not clear from the complaint, or if they believe other individuals made some of those threats, and that includes the one in St. Louis.
Do we have any sense at all about the girlfriend and whether or not there is any connection between her, the Jewish faith, or anything that could be tying all of these things together?
No, not immediately from looking at what we have available so far. It looks as though he wanted to, in the course of this cyber stalking smearing campaign, and also include that she is anti-Semitic, among other accusations that he's made against her in the course of this cyber stalking.
All right. Well, obviously, the story is going to be getting a lot of attention both locally and nationally. Rachel Lippman, thank you so much for bringing us up to speed.
Thank you.
It's breaking even as we speak, and I'm sure you'll be busy on it during the course of the day. Thank you very much. That's Rachel Lippman. We'll be back in a moment behind the headlines of this week's tornado in Perry County. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. And welcome back. And now to this week's tornado tragedy in and around Perryville, Missouri. Residents are literally picking up the pieces after the twister cut a swath through the county almost a mile wide and 15 miles long.
I mean, everybody is helping. I don't even know who half these people are, but they're so great. Right now we're just cleaning up. I don't know what the next steps are.
a typical reaction from a Perryville resident. Two of our own were in Perryville hours after the storm hit. Diversity fellow Jennifer Simone and photographer Carolina Hidalgo joined me in studio to talk about their experience. Thank you both for being with us. Nice to have you.
Yeah.
And nice job down there, by the way. Those are very trying circumstances, obviously.
Thanks.
Jenny, let me start with you. What is the most striking memory that you bring back from that experience?
I am from California and I've never experienced any sort of tornado. So the night before, I was really nervous about a tornado striking St. Louis because we were part of that warning.
It's happened before.
Yeah. And then going out there and seeing people who did need to be concerned about it and seeing their entire homes. I mean, one woman that I spoke to was like, yeah, my basement is in my attic is in somebody else's yard, and sort of understanding the full scope of the destruction. It's really hard to say that there's like a singular moment because all of it just felt really overwhelming in a lot of ways, just from somebody who's never experienced any sort of like tornado warning in any kind of way.
There's nowhere you can look where you don't see disaster, destruction, and despair.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Carolina, how about you? What memory do you bring back that is most striking?
I kind of, as a photographer, you know, I was looking for moments and I was trying to capture the extent of the damage, but I also wanted to find moments of people connecting with each other and helping each other. So one moment that did stand out to me was there was a guy, his name was Tyson Richarde, and he lost his home, but also his business, an auto body shop, was right next door, and that was also completely destroyed with a bunch of classic cars he was working on. And he was in there for most of the morning cleaning up, but I saw him, he was taking a break, and he had his son, his five-year-old, and, you know, he had kind of picked him up, and they were looking at everything, but they were also laughing together, and it was just kind of like they were sharing this little moment of normalcy and love. And so those are kind of the things that stand out to me.
How do you recognize those moments? Here's the way I would look at it, not being a photographer. You just take a camera, you can point it in any direction in a situation like this, you're going to get a good picture. But you're looking for specific kinds of things.
Yeah. Well, I personally don't want to just have a bunch of pictures of the damage. So it's kind of like, how do I incorporate that, how do I show the amount of damage, but also show how it's affecting people? And, you know, there was one woman, Lisa Irvin, who found her engagement photo with her husband. It was this great photo from 1989, and they had the 80s hair and the outfits, and she kind of rushed over to him, and she was kind of crying, but she was also really happy. So I think that those pictures say a lot more than just, you know, snapping photos of the destruction.
Yeah. You know, I saw a piece on television last night. Yes, occasionally we do watch television. And there was a situation in which a woman had lost a packet of letters, and they were returned to her from 30 miles away. The storm had carried that packet, and they came back intact. Jenny, how about your approach to this? I mean, do you feel like something of a voyeur when you're in a situation like this?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's really hard not to feel sort of like a vulture. And nobody is really like rude to you in any sort of way. But I mean, I went up to somebody whose house, I mean, everyone was standing around the front of their house that had just been pulled in on itself. And I was like, hey, I'm so sorry. Do you have a minute? Can I just ask you a couple questions? And he was like, you know, there's three other journalists that I've already talked to. Like, I'm pretty spent and I have a lot of work to do. And then sort of having to figure out like, okay, can I talk to your kids though? Because his kids were standing right there and they were like looking at me like, oh, are we going to be on television or something? So feeling like we have to, or feeling this duty of like, oh yeah, we're going to bring these stories to our audience, but also having to weigh that with how can I be as thoughtful as possible with the circumstances facing these people, and just trying to be as supportive as possible, but also maintaining that distance of I'm a journalist and I'm holding a microphone in your face.
A lot of emotion going on in these scenes. We heard earlier on from a woman who was so thankful for people who are coming in to help. We can hear more from her. Can you set that up for us?
Yeah. So Jill Abernathy, she didn't want to talk to me, actually, and she's a good example. But a bunch of her neighbors were like, come on, Jill, you like just let her know what happened, what's going on. And so she stood with me, and she her entire house was leveled. And she just, I think it was, she was really overwhelmed by how much work they had to do. So we can hear that.
Everything we were worried about, we found, including my wedding ring. Yeah, I had taken it off after I was doing dishes, and then I didn't, you know, you don't think tornadoes are really going to hit. You just go downstairs. You don't, we didn't have shoes. We didn't have our purses, you know, nothing. We had nothing. We had our phones because we needed flashlights, but that's it. I mean, everybody is helping. I don't even know who half these people are, but they're so great. Right now we're just cleaning up. I don't know what the next steps are.
Yeah. I mean, I think that a lot of people sort of had, I had that question over and over again, you know, what are next steps? And people just sort of looked at me like, what do you mean? What are the next steps? I don't know what the next steps are. Like, none of us do.
Yeah. And Carolina, when in looking at these people and talking with these people and little that I've watched and heard on the radio and on television, is there's a strength and a resilience. I mean, people, yes, they can get emotional, but they kind of roll up their sleeves right away to go to work and fix things.
Yeah, there were so many volunteers. The woman who just spoke said it, and someone else I talked to, she really wanted to emphasize. She told me, you know, if you're going to write anything, like, please thank all of these people who came. There was a young man who was helping at a house, and he just came by himself. He said he came from Festus, which was about an hour away. He just saw what happened, and he got in his car, and he came down to help. There was another woman who walked up. She was a little bit older. She couldn't really help, and she had taken these shoes that she had, these steel-toed boots, and she said, I just want to give these. Maybe someone who's cleaning up can use these.
Yeah. See the same thing, Jenny, this resilience, this strength that surfaces out of these situations?
Yeah, I would say that I saw it a lot with the kids who are around. And I know that maybe that's like a funny way to frame it. But like you have all these young people who are just like, OK, I guess this is what we're doing today, and don't necessarily have the weight of having to think about what is the insurance going to cover? Where are we going to sleep tonight? What are we going to eat? Like they don't have to worry about those things. And so that joy, kind of like what Caroline was talking about with that father and son pair, where their sort of amazement at what's happening is able to bring out better or like different emotions from the adults around them who are trying to grapple with the tragedy. And I think that makes everybody collectively stronger.
You can never get used to situations like this. But in Perry County, this is not the first tornado that's ever blown through the community.
Right. And I talked to Rick Shanklin, who is the warning coordination meteorologist with the National Weather Service. We were able to get numbers today that there were 110 single family homes hit. One mobile home and three businesses, but this is not something that Perry County has never seen before.
Well, you know, just to put things into perspective, this is rare to see a tornado of this intensity. This is a rare type tornado, but Perry County, Missouri here has had a couple of tornadoes in this general ballpark of intensity in the last decade and a half or so. This pretty much is close to the 1925 Tri-State Tornado, which is the nation's most record-setting tornado.
So that's all to say, it is like something that Perry County people are ready for, but that type of intensity with that tornado is not something that anyone could have expected. And you heard Jill Abernathy say that, you know, oh, you hear the warnings and you go downstairs without your shoes or your purse because you think it'll pass.
People who have not experienced the tornado and its aftermath, Caroline, unless they see one of your pictures or other pictures, don't recognize the scope of the damage. I mean, literally, houses and buildings are reduced to matchstick size in many cases. This is your first one.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I mean, it was pretty surprising. There were all of the basements were left. So, you know, you had the entire house gone, but there were these rooms that you could walk right up to the edge and look down. And and kind of see everything that was left in that room intact, but the whole rest of the house wasn't there.
Jenny, your reaction to the scope of the damage?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I totally identify with that, like going and seeing people's homes and like sort of, that goes to the voyeur feeling where it's like you're literally looking at the center of a person's house, like, or their basement where they have all this personal belongings, and like it just feels overexposed, but people are so busy trying to make sure that they can pull together what they can salvage outside of the house and all of that. And so they don't really care that you're there looking at the beds in the rec room or like the beat up pool table or like family photos. Like it does feel like it just rips you up a little bit. I feel like I don't know how else to explain it.
One of the interesting things in events like this is the things that people look for amongst the damage. It's not the flat screen television set. It is the wedding ring or the letter or the photograph.
Right. I would say, though, I talked to some kids who were there helping, trying to find things. And I think that also goes to this like kid wonderment where they were like, we're looking for like all the fancy stuff that my aunt lost and like all the expensive things. And I think it was just sweet that they were trying to find ways to help, but also we're just like having fun playing around in that area.
Carolina, were you there when the governor was there?
I wasn't. I was in a different part of town, and I couldn't get over there. But Jenny was there with
him. Yeah, Eric Reitens was there. He, it's really, I got to talk to him one-on-one, which is also sort of like, what is happening? Why am I here talking to the governor? But I feel like everyone was so grateful to see him there. We haven't heard if he's going to declare a state of emergency and possibly get some of those federal funds that could help rehabilitate that area. But I do think on a whole, people were very impressed to see him out there talking to people, hugging people. I mean, I think that's kind of his job, right, as governor, to save this like, oh, I'm here for the people. But it is hard to go out there and just walk around what's left of people's homes and, you know, hug them and say, I'm here for you in some way. And I know that he has increased funding for public safety, although he has made a lot of budget cuts and was not giving me a lot of details on what that would look like for Perry County.
They'll figure that out. I mean, obviously some help is going to have to be forthcoming. Only a little over a minute left, and Caroline, I wanted to ask you about how you can detach yourself from the emotion doing what you do.
See, that's a hard question. I don't know if maybe I've just – I mean, I've been doing this for a handful of years, and I don't think about it. It's kind of hard to articulate. I think I'm maybe just used to it. I'm looking for these specific things, and I'm looking for these moments and these emotions. But I don't really think about myself in all of that.
It kick into a kind of a professional photographer mode.
I guess so.
In a few seconds, Jenny, can you respond to that?
Yeah. I mean, I think at the end of the day, knowing that there's a team of people at the station who are ready to put together newscasts and need to get this information out to our audience, and you do sort of jump into like, okay, you don't want to talk to me, I will find somebody else who can talk to me, and just moving forward that way. And then sitting in the car later when we were driving back the hour and 20 minutes or however long it took, and just, you know, sort of going over, oh, did you remember that? And like, oh, yeah, I saw that. And just, I think you turn that off while you're reporting, but then later on,
it hits eventually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Jenny Simone, thank you so much for being with us.
Yeah,
welcome
thank you.
Home. And Carolina Hidalgo, thank you. Congratulations to you both on a great job. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.